With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Fearless with Jason Whitlock. I'm Jason Whitlock, your host. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Special edition of Fearless with Jason Whitlock today. We hope that you're enjoying our holiday break and your holiday break. But we got to keep pumping out this great content. And man, am I excited about today's show and today's guest, Liz Collins. She's put out a documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, that you guys heard me talking about a few weeks ago. I want to play you the trailer for The Fall of Minneapolis. It's about the George Floyd hoax, tragedy, whatever. And we'll play the trailer, and then we'll bring Liz on, and we'll get into this discussion.
The murder of George Floyd.
Murder. Murder and manslaughter.
The murder of George Floyd.
Peaceful protest overnight in the Twin Cities.
They've been very peaceful. The crowd continues to be peaceful.
8:46, 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
9 minutes and 29 seconds.
Actually, 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
By the way, that particular technique is not authorized by the MPD.
Is this a trained Minneapolis Police Department technique?
It is not.
When I heard that, I really wanted to get up off my chair and yell, bullshit.
From what I've seen of the videotape, the photograph, and the police training manual, they look pretty identical.
Were you trained in MRT, the maximal restraint technique?
Yes.
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 Yes, all the police officers were trained in the MRT.
George Floyd says, I got shot last time.
I got shot the same way as I was before.
Did you shoot him?
No, I didn't shoot him, no.
You helped to train Officer Alex King. What did you think of him?
I probably trained a few thousand people. He was probably one of the top two.
Give me a minute.
This call is from a federal prison.
Hi, Derek, it's Liz.
All right, so you guys, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about this documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis. I connected it to a previous documentary about Trayvon Martin and all of these race crime hoaxes to drive a political narrative. Liz, I want to welcome you to the show, and I want to thank you for taking the time. And you've put together a marvelous, a powerful documentary. It totally contradicts the narrative that corporate media promoted for several years about Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. What has been the reaction so far in Minneapolis to the political figures and the media there in Minneapolis to your documentary?
First, I just want to thank you so much for having me on, Jason. And you were very early on to endorse this film. So we appreciate that so much here at Alpha News. But it's been viewed millions of times all around the world, which is remarkable. People still seem to believe in the truth. So there is hope here. I'll say the reaction has obviously surpassed any expectation we had. We wanted to just offer this for free to get as many people as possible to watch. I know it won't surprise you, but completely ignored by the mainstream media, here in the Twin Cities and really across the country, of course. And political figures, I think, to this day are still quite quiet when it comes to this case. But that was really the point of all of this. You decide. Here are all the facts. Here are all the things that that were kept from you. Ask yourself why that is. You go ahead and make your mind up yourself. And also, you know, just to point to all the consequences of all of this that we're still living to this day because of these lies.
The Minneapolis Star Tribune, have they not done a story on you in this documentary?
You know, they briefly mentioned the documentary, sadly, after Derek Chauvin was stabbed just 8 days after this documentary came out in Tucson, Arizona, where he's been for the last 15 months. But the Star Tribune mentioned the documentary, just the timing of it and his stabbing, basically just to say that the film attempted to garner sympathy for the four officers involved. And beyond that sentence, there really wasn't much of anything else.
So, Liz, it's my understanding you were involved in the mainstream media for many years before transitioning to an independent journalist. How shocked are you that they can ignore, and again, they don't even have to endorse it. They could cover it and criticize you and criticize the documentary, but to ignore it and dismiss it, That's really shocking to me. You've worked with these guys in Minneapolis. Are you shocked by this?
Nothing seems to shock me anymore, Jason, I'll be honest. But I think that that's where we are in this country, sadly. I was a member of the mainstream media for 20 years in total, 15 years nearly, at this CBS station where I worked, WCCO, but before leaving. And I left over all of this because there was so much information that the media could have been passing on to the public when it came to this case. Several stories, but before this as well, I kind of saw the writing on the wall in mainstream media. But I was really just sickened, not so much what we were telling the public on a nightly basis, but what we were not. And I do think that this information, the truth in all of this, would have made a difference very early on. Instead, you had our politicians fanning the flames. You had journalists turn into activists. There was no pushing back on any of the things that they were saying. I was saying they're lying over and over again about all of this. I was connected. My husband was the union president at the time of the Minneapolis Police Department, so I had a view that way. But I put out a book called They're Lying, The Media, the Left, and the Death of George Floyd, and that was last October. And tried, you know, again, the mainstream media completely ignored that and whatnot. So then we put this documentary out after more people were willing to come forward and sort of tell their stories for the first time. But yeah, I think that this is what we see again and again from mainstream media, that they ignore, just hoping we will go away in a way. And nobody to this day, you know, it's just been a couple weeks now, but have challenged the facts of this. Instead, it's name calling, you know, the things we expect at this point, but nobody is challenging the facts, and that says a lot.
One of the criticisms I've heard is that, you know, your husband was a member of the Minneapolis Police Department. How do you answer that charge? Does that make you biased and someone who should not be trusted on this topic?
Yeah, I think you know, it's also a sad state of affairs in this country when you lose your position. I mean, I was actually knocked off the anchor desk for being married to a police officer. That's as crazy as that sounds. But I admit fully that I had a very unique perspective in all of this, and obviously have a connection to law enforcement. But here's the thing: I never set out to write a book about this, to put out a documentary. I was waiting for somebody else to actually step in and set the record straight here. But it was sort of a calling, kind of on my heart, that this is what I'm supposed to be doing, because so many lives were turned upside down and simply did not have to be, you know, due to the lies that were peddled. So that's kind of how I respond to that. Frankly, I feel very lucky to be a member of the law enforcement family, and I feel blessed to kind of give them a voice in all of this because it's been taken away from them for so long.
Well, there were several pivotal moments, and I'm not going to start with the number one thing that made my mouth drop to the floor. I'm not going to start there. I'm going to start with what I think most people's takeaway would be as the most pivotal deal, is that your documentary makes the case pretty strongly that Derek Chauvin followed the procedures that the Minneapolis Police Department taught him. The manual restraint or a maximal restraint technique or whatever. You showed pictures. You had half dozen other law enforcement members say, I was trained in that. You showed that the chief was lying. And then I think it was a woman, maybe an inspector. She was lying, acting like we never taught this. Is that the pivotal part of your documentary in your view?
Yeah, and I talk more about this in the book as well. This is the very first day after the incident involving George Floyd on May 25th of 2020 in Minneapolis that you have the chief and the mayor sort of proudly declare to the media that whatever is transpiring out there at that intersection, they have no idea. This is not how we train. This is not a part of training. And I go at that time, still a reporter in mainstream media, to the website that contains the Minneapolis Police Department manual. It's an online document, which I've referred to before. And there are two pages that are mysteriously gone from that document. And this is when I start saying, well, they're lying. We need to push back. These two pages are gone that references the MRT, the maximal restraint technique, which the officers are referencing in the body camera footage. But again, the body camera footage is withheld from the public for so long. And that's why we use it in the film, because for many, it's the very first time they've ever seen any of it. And, you know, again, people should wonder why. But you're right. I think that is really a critical point in all of this. You have the chief say that. You have the inspector, Katie Blackwell, who was the head of training at the time, say that. And also, you know, Katie Blackwell was promoted. She's the assistant police chief now in Minneapolis. And it doesn't seem to be that there were, you know, there was any pushback against these people under oath saying it wasn't a part of training, even though every officer I talked to, more than a dozen for the film, you know, point to their training as far back as 1993 that contained the maximal restraint technique in their policy.
And so I know for people that have swallowed the George Floyd, the St. George Floyd narrative, this is what irritates them about me. The other part of the documentary, and still not the most compelling part for me, but this is another thing that got me, was that Derek Chauvin, I know you're not supposed to express any sympathy for Derek Chauvin, but Derek Chauvin shows up on the scene. George Floyd's been a headache for 15, 20 minutes with these other officers when Derek Chauvin shows up. And 36 seconds after taking George Floyd to the ground, they call for paramedics. And so I can imagine if I'm Derek Chauvin and you've been on the police force for 10, 15 years or however long Derek Chauvin has, he's like, well, paramedics will be here in 90 seconds, 2 minutes tops. They're just around the corner. And so when he does the MRT move, he's thinking, well, this is going to last 90 seconds, 2 minutes tops, because the paramedics will be here, and then they're going to take over. And it'll be just like a year ago when George Floyd got arrested by the other officer that you did. And so there's all this chaos going on, and in my view, Derek Chauvin likely lost track of time. He's being yelled and screamed at. There's all this. His expectations were, well, this is going to be 90 seconds, 2 minutes. And he had no idea in the chaos of, like, this was 8 minutes. And I know people don't want to hear that. But when I watch the documentary and when I see the mistakes that the paramedics made and how Derek Chauvin, I think, says it took him 20 minutes to get there because they went someplace else. I thought that was very compelling and really speaks to, like, Derek Chauvin had no malicious intent here. Accidents just happen and mistakes happen, and this got way out of hand.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point here, too. There was so much more to this story that they could have been honest about. You speak to this fire rig, which contains some EMS members, but basically they arrive 20 minutes later. The paramedics are there about 8 or 9 minutes, but you're right. They should have been there in 2 or 3 minutes. You even have a firefighter who takes the stand, who's there shouting obscenities at the officers that day, who admits to that exact point. And you talk about, you know, George Floyd's behavior, which I think there is so much to be said about this, about the lies that basically start with George Floyd himself, tragically, when the officers are recognizing, again, you have Alex King, who's been on the job for 3 days off of field training, and you have Thomas Lane. These are the two officers that arrive and interact with him for nearly 13 minutes before Derek Chauvin arrives on scene. But they're saying, what are you on, man? You know what's going on? And George Floyd denies again and again being on anything. And you have George Floyd refusing to get in the squad car. He himself is the one that asks to be laid on the ground. He says he's claustrophobic, despite the fact that officers just pull him out of a cramped squad car, to be taken into custody. And again, you have this very dangerous narrative.
Let me correct you. Yeah. One thing you said, squad car. He got taken out of his own cramped car.
His own
George Floyd's
car. Yeah, to be put into a squad car. Correct. Yes. Yeah. So there's just so much to be said about what takes place before Derek Chauvin arrives on scene. You know, again, complaining that he can't breathe before Derek Chauvin is even there.
So the most powerful thing to me that made my mouth just drop to the floor and I actually rewound it and was like, come on, did she really say that? And did this guy really say this? The minister at the George Floyd funeral opening that ceremony with a shout out to the, I believe, Bloods or Crips one, Vice Lords and Gangster Disciples, that just blew my mind. And so is there any context around that? Did I hear that's how they opened the funeral service? Is the church filled with gang members? Did they yet need permission from gang members to hold the service? Is there any context that could help me understand how that happened?
Yeah, I think we have a lot more about that in the book as well. Just the history of Minneapolis and, you know, the Attorney General of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, who had a long history himself of representing gang members. You know, again, he's the top law enforcement officer in Minnesota at this point, Keith Ellison. But nobody in the media wanted to talk about Keith Ellison's background. And again, I'm watching the funeral service as I'm monitoring all of this as a reporter. And I'm saying, aren't we going to point this out to people that this is how the funeral started? But of course, you know, everybody's afraid at that point to speak the truth about this. That was pretty early on. But there is a relationship between Keith Ellison and that pastor who led the service that is quite telling that we detail a bit in the film, but more so in the book. But yes, absolutely, that happened, and nobody seemed to call attention to it at the time.
Give us some of that detail of the relationship, Keith Ellison and his connections to the gangs there. This is the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota who has clear gang ties from his history as a defense attorney, I guess.
Right, which dates back decades. In fact, he was involved with the execution, representing someone who was involved, I should say, with the execution of a Minneapolis police officer. Jerry Hoff was his name. He was having coffee on a break one day during his shift as a Minneapolis cop, and he was executed by a gang member. And Keith Ellison represented someone who was involved with plotting the death of this officer in that coffee shop, a very well-documented case in Minneapolis history. He has a long history of hating the police. These are things that he's said in public during press conferences. So ultimately, this is no surprise as far as how he takes over this case. But the press wasn't really willing to go there, of course. But ultimately, he puts four police officers behind bars for this incident. Also, Kim Potter, who was involved with another incident during all of this and the death of Dante Wright. So five, you know, police officers in Minnesota in prison as the Attorney General of Minnesota. But this is really no surprise if you look into his background, which it seemed the media was really afraid to do. And again, you have Hennepin County prosecutors, I should say, Jason, that did not want to charge. They didn't feel comfortable with charging the three officers in this case involving George Floyd at all. They withdrew from the case due to ethical and moral reasons, they say, in a formal letter written to the Hennepin County attorney at the time, Mike Freeman. But then you have Keith Ellison swoop in with his dream team of attorneys. That's how he refers to them, the Michael Jordans of attorneys, he calls them in this case. And he takes over the prosecution and makes sure those three other officers are charged with aiding and abetting murder in the death of George Floyd.
So last week I had Megyn Kelly on, and I asked her this question, and it's actually a better question for you, given your connection to Minneapolis and just boots on the ground. Let's say you're Keith Ellison and whoever the goofy mayor is. I remember his hairstyle more than I do his name.
What about his dance moves? Do you remember those?
Yeah, I do remember the dance moves, the okay. police chief. The jury, the judge, all of these people know, like, if we do the right thing, this city's probably going to burn an additional two to three weeks. There's going to be more riots, more destruction for 2 to 3 more weeks. And I can see politicians saying that, hey, the way the media is rigged, Minneapolis's reputation, and it won't be fair, but the reputation will be, oh, this is the most racist city in America. And so if do you have any sympathy at all for the position the leaders were in, knowing the consequences if they did the right thing?
You know, I would feel differently at this point and would have sympathy if you didn't have them all doubling down on all of this. Nobody these days can admit they were wrong, that they got it wrong, and show any sort of empathy in all of this. Two, the police that were forced to leave the profession, I mean, hundreds of officers. So that's difficult for me. I know they didn't have some way to look into the future to see, sadly, what's become of Minneapolis as a result of all of this. But there are interesting backstories to all of these people that were making decisions, basically outsiders to Minnesota. The governor is a Nebraska transplant, sort of handpicked here. And you have the mayor, Jacob Frey, who was hand-plucked from Virginia to come here and run for city council and then become mayor of Minneapolis. Keith Ellison, we've talked about his past. So really the perfect people in the perfect positions for this to play out in this state. But also, even after the stabbing of Derek Chauvin, there are so many questions involving that, because you have Keith Ellison, again, the man who put Derek Chauvin behind bars in the first place, is the first one, the first Minnesota official to even be briefed on his condition at all. And he was providing updates on how Derek Chauvin is doing after nearly being fatally stabbed, it sounds like, at this point. And nobody in the media is questioning, well, wait a minute, Derek Chauvin's own family knows nothing. Why is the guy who led the prosecution against him being called by the FBI with information? So again, I just think there's some troubling details in all of this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Is there any hope for Derek Chauvin? I know the Supreme Court, I guess, turned down an appeal. Is there any hope for Derek Chauvin?
Yeah, so we have the U.S. Supreme Court that denied the appeal recently, but there are a couple of things going on with new evidence in the case. He has a new attorney, Bill Mormon, who is featured in the film The Fall of Minneapolis as well, who we talked to, and there's some new evidence with some depositions that were recently made public, and where that information came from about the prosecutors in Hennepin County not feeling comfortable going ahead with charges. The other officers went ahead and pled guilty after seeing what happened in Derek Chauvin's trial, thinking there's no possible way they can get a fair trial in Hennepin County. So they go ahead, you know, because they could have faced 10, 15 years in prison, and they just decide to get back to their families as early as possible. They'll go ahead and plead, you know, to spend, you know, 3 to 5 years is what their sentences are. So this new information that just came to light a couple months ago, the attorneys I know are looking at, perhaps they would not have pled, you know, had they known that so many people were against charging them in the first place.
Well, you know, not that they'll be treated like the Central Park Five, but if you remember that case, those guys took plea agreements and ended up so-called getting exonerated. But I don't want to open that can because the whole exonerated five deal is a lie as well. But there was one off. You talked to three of the off. You talked to Derek. I think you talked to Alex King. You talked to Thomas Lane. And is it Tu Tao? Did I get the name right of the Asian officer? Yeah. He seems most fascinating to me because I watched his comments the day he was sentenced. And man, he went down like a soldier. I mean, I got so much respect for him. And he's the one guy that I don't think was in your documentary. Why weren't you able to reach him? And I feel bad for all these guys, but I love that guy. I mean, he read the Bible to the judge and stood his ground. I got so much respect them all, but him the most, I guess. Did you try to reach out and get him involved? And I was surprised he wasn't involved.
Yeah, I'm still in touch with his attorney and family, and they were on board with all of this. We didn't want to make the documentary, you know, here are just the four officers. There was a lot more to all of this we wanted to bring out. So some of that was just about timing. The documentary could have been about 6 hours in total. You're right, though, about that sentencing. That really said a lot about Judge Peter Cahill, who presided over all of this. That's why Tu Tao ultimately is given nearly a 5-year prison sentence because he's reciting Bible verses during his sentencing to the judge, even says that he'll pray for the judge and has been praying for the judge in this case. And the judge fires back and says he is appalled, basically, that Tu Tao is showing no remorse for what happened to George Floyd and gives him ultimately a longer sentence than the two other officers that he sentenced as well. So I do know that he's been the subject of some things that have happened in prison too over the last couple years. And again, let's not forget, Derek Chauvin is partners with Tu Tao. Again, Chauvin, of course, made to be the most racist cop in America. And most of his partners over his 19-year career were minority officers. And that became such a huge part of this narrative that the media and politicians wanted to push. And none of the facts supported any of this in the end.
I know I'm not on rock solid ground here, what I'm about to say, but I'm just telling you, this is the way I felt. I read somewhere, is it accurate that Derek Chauvin's 165 pounds?
He's a very small, I think actually less than that, a very small guy.
Yeah, and so this is, you watch the videos, you watch all the media coverage, and you kind of make up in your mind, like, oh, this is some 6 foot, 6 foot one, 220-pound officer, and he's got his knee on his neck. And it's like, no, this is a tiny person. And again, you didn't even go into this, but you really did go into it because you talked about what the autopsy revealed. There were no injuries here to George Floyd. This alleged knee on his neck caused no injuries. You guys didn't make the argument, but I think part of the reason is like, this is a 165-pound guy or 150-pound guy. This isn't some giant guy on the back of a 6'4", 250-pound person. I know I'm not supposed to have sympathy for Derek Chauvin, but I'm sorry, I do. This is what a railroad case, and I'm embarrassed. Are you despised by your former peers in the media? Do you have any relationship with anybody you used to work with in the media?
I do. Those relationships are, you know, now behind closed doors because it's not good, not good for their reputations, of course. But it certainly has severed people that I thought were my friends and believed in the same things I did as a journalist. But it is sad, you know, that in corporate America, people have to worry about their health insurance or put their kids through college, you know, and go ahead and sacrifice their morals in the process. But I guess that's where we are. I always get that question, though, about how I'm sort of treated. But mostly, you know, I'm just ignored. They hope that I'll go away, which isn't going to happen because there's endless material here in Minnesota, probably, as you know, Jason, to report on that simply the mainstream media does a very bad job in doing. So it's good job security for what we do here at Alpha News.
And so one of the, you know, I asked you the question earlier about the consequences and can you understand why people were reluctant, thinking, oh, man, you know, I could get killed, the city could burn. But there are the long-term consequences that your film argues pretty powerfully, like this city has lost control. There is no law and order. We've shrunk the police department by about 30%. Criminals are in charge of the streets. This shrine and this whole area they've built to George Floyd is probably one of the most unsafe places on the planet. Could you talk about just the consequences, the long-term consequences of what has gone on in Minneapolis? And that's why I think they made a tragic, they should have stood their ground and did the right thing, dealt with the short-term consequences, because the long-term consequences of what they did are far worse.
Oh, absolutely. Well said for sure as to everything that's transpired. You know, putting the book out, you know, so long before the movie, I thought things would maybe perhaps get a little bit better, but it really just continues to get worse. And, you know, that's why we call the last part here the right side of history. This is the mantra that you have politicians and the former police chief, et cetera. They're all saying we're going to live on the right side of history after all of this. That was kind of peddled again and again by all of them. And I've yet to run into a person to honestly say that we, in fact, are. You have things like carjackings. They were never tracked in Minneapolis before. Hundreds of those happening in the city every year. The highest 3 years ever on record in Minneapolis as far as homicides happened in the wake of all of this, nearly double what a typical year would bring. You know, again, crimes that just never even really happened. It was a very safe city in Minneapolis in the Midwest. I lived in the city for a dozen years and always felt very safe. I was thankful to get out into the suburbs before all of this. But you have people fleeing the city. You have businesses. I think just last year alone, about 1,100 businesses left the city of Minneapolis. That was documented. Downtown is, you know, basically non-existent in the city anymore. You have, you know, outside a Twins game that happened kind of recently, somebody shot and killed on the light rail platform in the middle of the day. Again, just horrific things that have taken place. And I really think that if they, exactly like you said, would have been honest about all of this, none of this had to happen. There are so many victims in all of this these last 3 years. But you also have a mayor who's doubled down. You have a new police chief in charge of Minneapolis that has doubled down, who made a very big public press conference of destroying Derek Chauvin's badge and, you know, talking about what a disgusting cop he was. But just to talk a little bit more about Derek Chauvin, I mean, this is a guy who'd been on the job for 19 years. He had about 18 complaints, which really isn't much. He never even needed union representation. My husband barely knew the guy, you know, because his job was sort of to represent the people that needed representation. But Derek never had that. He was a very quiet cop. But what he was built into is really just the power of the media. It's a remarkable, remarkable thing that they can turn people into monsters, as you know, overnight.
Liz, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I'm going to make an assumption. I'm going to make a comment here that's going to assume you must be a believer, because only believers have the kind of courage you're showing here by doing this. And so the only thing I would ask you to do, because that was the only, I think at some point in the documentary, it said something about the right side of history. And I'm trying to make sure believers know that this whole, the left loves to have that argument about being on the right side of history. And that's because they always plan on writing history. And that's something they can control. And so the standard is, I want to be on the right side of God at all times. And so that's how I like to argue. Am I on the right side of God? And that's standing on truth. No matter how uncomfortable truth is, that's where God wants you standing. And there were truths about George Floyd that we could all see in real time. They want, and Liz, you don't have any reason to know this, but I had a cousin that I helped raise. He was killed by police in Indiana, by sheriffs in Indianapolis in 2012. I'm not unsympathetic to the whole police brutality issue, but because of what's happened in my family, Anton Butler, I paid for the funeral, I helped raise him, I love the kid. I just understand how complicated these issues are. And I have to come at, no matter how much I loved Anton, I have to come at it from a realistic perspective about some of his decision-making, and even though I think the sheriffs were wrong. But these issues are very complicated. We must have the courage to stand on truth. That's how you stand with God. Thank you so much for being courageous. You know, we'll continue to pray for you, Minneapolis, and Derek Chauvin, and I think about that. Alex King, his third shift as a cop, and this guy's in prison. It's what a tragedy. Thank you, Liz. Have a great Christmas. Have a great holiday season. Thank
God
you
bless
so
you.
Much.
Thank you for everything you do, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yep. Hey, guys, if you're still out shopping for Christmas gifts, you know what you should do? Go to shopblazemedia.com/fearless. Use my promo code Jason25 for 25% off all orders on the Fearless Shop. All right. Thanks for watching. Have a great Christmas.
I just